Welcome to a new deep dive. Today, we're tackling something pretty fundamental. It governs basically everything from your refrigerator right up to massive power plants. It's the laws of energy. Specifically, we're digging into the second principle of thermodynamics. We're drawing our insights mainly from a really comprehensive source, La Termodinamica, Principi e Applicazioni. And our mission really is to figure out why things naturally seem to move in one direction and, you know, what that means for how we actually build and innovate stuff.
Yeah, and what's so fascinating, I think, is how observations that seem almost, well, obvious, like heat always flowing from a hot cup of coffee to the cooler air, how those simple things actually lead to these incredibly profound insights about the universe itself. We'll explore the key ideas that explain why some processes are possible and why others, like, say, the dream of a perpetual motion machine, just aren't. There's this unavoidable sort of energy tax on everything.
Okay, so this principle tells us what's impossible, right? Like getting 100% efficiency out of anything. How does that impossibility actually, you know, show up in the real world? What does it tell us about our engineering limits? We often hear about Kelvin's statement, you can't just take heat from one source and turn it all into work. For you listening, what's a good way to picture that? Like a simple thought experiment, maybe, that really hammers home why this isn't just theory, but a hard limit in something like a power plant.
Well, the easiest way is to think about waste heat. It's absolutely unavoidable. Look at any thermal engine, your car engine, a big power station.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter. You always have to dump some heat into a colder place like the atmosphere or a river to actually get useful work done. Kelvin's statement nails this. It's not about bad design. It's just a fundamental rule. The universe charges a tax, like I said, on converting heat to work. And then there's the flip side, Clausius's statement, which basically says heat won't just decide to flow from a cold thing to a hot thing all by itself. You need to put work in to make that happen.
That's your refrigerator.
Right. It actively pumps heat out using electricity. And the source material we looked at really stresses how these two statements, Kelvin's and Clausius's, are essentially equivalent.
Ah, okay. Two sides of the same coin.
Exactly. They both describe this fundamental one-way street for how energy behaves naturally.
That makes sense. So if we have these unavoidable directions and perfect efficiency is off the table, what's the absolute best we can achieve? That sort of brings us to Carnot, right? And his theoretical Carnot machine. What's so important about this ideal machine, and why do our actual engines, diesel, petrol, whatever, always underperform compared to it?
Carnot's genius was figuring out the absolute upper limit for efficiency, the theoretical maximum. For any heat engine working between two specific temperatures, say the hot part and the cold part, there's a ceiling. And crucially, he showed this limit applies even under perfect ideal conditions, what we call reversible processes. No friction, no heat leaks, none of that. So it's not just some abstract idea, it's a hard physical boundary.
A real constraint.
Absolutely. Whether you're talking engine efficiency or how well a fridge or heat pump works, what we call the coefficient of performance, all these performance measures are ultimately limited by the second principle, as captured by Carnot's ideal cycle. You can make designs better, use advanced materials, fine-tune everything, but you can never, ever beat that fundamental limit set by the temperatures involved.
So we're always chasing percentages, knowing perfection is literally impossible.
Pretty much, yeah. We're constantly pushing against that ceiling.
Okay, so we've got these, like, ironclad limits on efficiency, all governed by how energy naturally wants to flow. But the ultimate why behind this direction, the real core idea, seems to lie in this concept called entropy. Which, let's be honest, can feel a bit abstract, maybe mysterious for a lot of people. What is it really that makes entropy such a big deal for understanding how the universe works? Is it just disorder?
Well, disorder is the common shorthand, and it's not totally wrong, but it can be a bit misleading. For our purposes, it's maybe more accurate to think of entropy as a measure of how energy spreads out, how dispersed it becomes. Or thinking microscopically, it's related to the number of different ways the tiny bits, atoms, and molecules can be arranged while still looking the same from the outside, macroscopically. The source highlights Clausius's inequality here. It's more than just a formula. It's key because it quantifies how entropy changes in real, irreversible processes.
Yeah.
It shows us exactly how much order, or maybe better, how much energy concentration gets lost along the way. And then Boltzmann's work connects us to the microscopic world.
Right, the statistical view.
Exactly. He linked entropy directly to the number of possible microscopic arrangements, the microstates, that correspond to the overall state we observe, the macro state.
Yeah.
And the reason processes go one way and not the other is simply probability.
Yeah.
There are usually vastly, vastly more ways for things to be disordered or spread out then ordered or concentrated. Think about shuffling a deck of cards. There's only one perfectly ordered sequence, right? Ace to king for every suit.
Yeah.
But there are countless jumbled, disordered arrangements. It's just overwhelmingly more likely you'll end up in one of those disordered states when you shuffle. Nature works the same way.
So boiling it all down then, what's the big takeaway for you listening to this deep dive? Understanding the second principle, it's not just academic, it's not just about engine specs, it's really about appreciating these deep fundamental tendencies of the universe, how energy wants to behave, and realizing the hard limits that places on everything we design and build, from Carnot's ideal efficiency right down to why things tend towards, well, this state of higher entropy or dispersal. It reveals the universe's preferred direction.
Right. And it leaves us with a really profound question, doesn't it? If the entire universe is fundamentally locked onto this path of ever-increasing entropy towards greater dispersal, as Boltzmann's insights strongly suggest, What does that imply for the long-term future? For our technology, for complex systems, even for the cosmos itself? It's a concept that's still shaping how we think about energy, about technology, and maybe even about the direction of time itself. It constantly pushes us to be smarter, to innovate within these unchangeable cosmic rules.